The death of God is about the drying up of a horizon of meaning and of a whole form of human life.
Where do we stand in the illusion it makes? What kind of space are we invited into?
The material relations between people become social relations between things. When we look at toasters, corn, and TVs,
to a large extent, live in the interregnum between worlds, if you will, or between paradigms. Not many people in the history of the world have faced that.
Zero Squared is the Zero Books podcast. Mateus Granzina is a 27-year-old Brazilian artist living in Sao Paulo, working on a television show about a school-aged penguin named Oswaldo for the Cartoon Network. He is part of what might be called the algorithmic left. And in this episode of the podcast, we discuss the 2018 presidential election in Brazil, the campaign and victory of the far-right candidate Jair Bolsonaro, and the consequences of both the Brazilian recession and the car wash scandal. The music you're listening to right now is a theme from Oswaldo, but in just a moment, you'll be listening to Mateus and I discuss how an authoritarian extreme right winger gained power in Brazil. Mateus Granzina is a 27-year-old Brazilian artist living in Sao Paulo, working in television animation, and he's agreed to come onto the Zero Books podcast in order to discuss the upcoming election, which may very well make the Social Liberal Party candidate Jair Bolsonaro the new president of Brazil. Thanks for coming onto the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for calling me.
Before we start in on the politics, I want to know a little bit more about you. You contacted me through Facebook. You watched a few of the videos we make, and you are in television animation yourself. I've seen some of your work. It's really a lot of fun. What sort of work do you do beyond what I saw on Facebook? Are you employed for a television station?
Yeah. I work as an assistant character design in a TV animated series called Oswaldo, which is its own Cartoon Network in Brazil.
Tell me about that. What's that show about?
It's a penguin that lives in Rio de Janeiro. And he has like two friends, and he gets all sorts of trouble, and it's like I don't know, it's like for kids.
Is it aimed at younger kids, or is it sort of aimed at
it's younger
adolescents?
Kids. It's like I believe it's like 7-year-olds, maybe like 7 to 12-year-olds. I don't know exactly.
Did you go to art school?
No, actually, I went to advertising school, and I worked in advertising like for 6 years or something. But I always wanted to work in animation, but I didn't have the portfolio and stuff. But I got the gig last year through a friend of mine. They got me a test in the studio. It's called Beardo Studio. And since then, I've been working there. Really, really glad to be working there. It's nice stuff.
Sounds like a dream gig, really, for someone who wants to work in animation.
Yeah. It's like from Brazil, it's one of the studios that I most like. I've been following them before I started working there, and I'm really glad to be working there.
You found our YouTube videos, and you reached out to me, and I'm kind of assuming you're fairly well entrenched on the left. Is that true?
Well, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, I don't want to out you or anything if you're going to be facing trouble after the election. And you know what? I say that in all seriousness. So, I mean,
I know.
But so if you don't want to go into your leftist activities, if there is any to speak of.
No.
I will just ask.
It's okay.
Go ahead.
I guess I'm a leftist. I mean, I guess I'm entrenched in leftist, but I'm not like a super orthodox Marxist that read all the work. But I believe in all the leftist ideals, you know, and I like watching the leftist videos from YouTube.
Are there some Portuguese language YouTubers that we would do well to watch if we could, you know, find a good translation?
Actually, I don't know if I follow that much leftist Brazilian YouTubers, you know? I guess mostly I was following ContraPoints, which I love, and then Peter Coffin, and maybe Zero Books came up in some midway. Zizek, I love watching Kishek, his lectures. I like working, listening to them. And
do you listen to him while you're drawing?
Yeah.
Well, this is interesting because it's sort of it's a new kind of left. It's the algorithms left, right?
Yeah, that's my kind of left right there.
Right. So, how concerned are you about the upcoming election?
Well, to be fair, I'm like very concerned, you know. We really wasn't expecting all the repercussion that Bolsonaro was getting, you know, because from what I remember, he was basically a meme back in 2013 when we had like we had big protests in Brazil in 2013 that started from they were rising the price on the bus pass, and a lot of protests came up, and people have been really frustrated at our government and corruption for a pretty long time, and all came up. It started like as a leftist thing, protest. Right wing people never really participate in no demonstration, and but with the media coverage, and it started to bring a lot of people to the table, to the streets, and then things got really polarized. You get like at the end of the protest, you had like people from the left and far right marching, and there was clashes, and stuff got really, really, really weird.
What were they clashing about when they were marching? Because it's around this increase in the bus fare that it all started. But how did it break out and divide up? What were the protests about after it moved beyond? Or did it move beyond
the
issue of the bus fare?
Yeah, it started from the bus fare, more from the side of the left. But people started to come up, and the stuff from the bus fare really got lost in the middle of, because people started to bring all kind of stuff and kind of vague things out. We're against corruption, we're against bad things, you know. And I guess the clashes at those protests were more specific. They didn't really get very bloody or stuff. It was more people got kicked some people and then they divided, and it wasn't really that bad. But the protests they made people more and polarized is not really the word, but they made people more kind of care about politics, you know. More militant. So people who were kind of leaning to the left, like I was, I really didn't call myself a leftist since before those protests. And after those protests, I was a leftist. I considered myself an anarchist after the protests. And people who were more right-leaning, they came up and started getting really nationalism and pro guns and stuff, you know. And I guess Bolsonaro came up in as this idea of Bolsonaro 2018 came up in the middle of this stuff, you know.
Did Bolsonaro participate in the streets? Did he like speak during the protests from the streets?
No. Bolsonaro was more of a, he was an infamous politic. because I guess he was attending television shows and saying all kind of shit for a really long time. You know, he's been a, I guess, congressman for like 20 something years. And one day, a TV show made an interview with him, and I guess they knew he was kind of a dick, in lack of a better word. And they started to ask like what he thought about gays, gay marriage, and made some questions about what he thought of black people, you know. And all his answers was really, really nasty, you know. He had this the kind of stuff. I don't want my kid watching two big guys kissing in the restaurant, you know. And I mean, you got those guys over there, I bet. And
there's plenty of people who are homophobic in the United States, and you hear that kind of stuff all the time. Although less so than maybe 10, 20 years ago, you know. It seems like it's less and less acceptable to be overtly homophobic. Even like Donald Trump, who is considered to be an enemy of gay people, makes some gestures towards accepting or tolerating that. And it doesn't. He would never say something like that.
I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens from the violence and oppression of a hateful foreign ideology. Believe me. And I have to say, as a Republican, it is so nice to hear you cheering for what I just said. Thank you.
Yeah, Bolsonaro is really, he was really open about it. But since he started running as a candidate, he kind of got more careful, you know. Those kind of stuff he would say back in 2009 was when this show made this interview with him, and it ran on the web for a long time, and I guess people from the protests kind of got into it, and I guess this is when Bolsonaro 2018 was born, and now we're here really afraid of he's probably going to win, you know.
When did the car wash scandal come up? Scandal about skimming money out of the exchanges between a couple of oil companies in South America, where they were taking money and then using it for political purposes, and Lula was apparently gifted a $500,000 apartment from that fund, and it's called the car wash scandal here in the United States.
Yeah. Operação Lava Jato in Portuguese, which is car wash. And I don't know, the car wash, it got really big on 2016. It was really the media coverage got really heavy on that. And to be fair, I don't really fully understand this operation car wash, because it's very convoluted. It's really hard to follow. But
you're talking about transactions between two big multinational corporations.
Yeah. So. And when it was on the media more often, it would be every day a new guy would say someone got money from somebody else, and it was really hard to follow, and I don't really watch the TV over here.
So the reason it was called the car wash scandal was because money that was being over, basically one of the companies was overcharging the other, and then the money that really shouldn't have been paid was going into these sort of front companies like car washes to launder the money, and then it was being funneled into political campaigns.
Yeah, yeah.
In Brazil, is for the Workers' Party.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, but the Workers' Party wasn't the only one in this. That's the part that I really don't understand fully, because there are all sorts of names in this stuff. But the media coverage really was leaning to the Workers' Party, because we got a media that's I guess you could say it's a right-wing media, but they always align with the opposition of the Workers' Party. But there was all sorts of people, even the opposition of the Workers' Party, which is I don't know how to translate that, but it's called PSDB on Brazil. It's sort of it's a new liberal party.
Is that what Bolsonaro is running as part of?
No,
or the social.
No, no, actually, okay. Bolsonaro is more of an outsider. This is where things get crazy, because Bolsonaro was not. He is opposition to Workers' Party, but he wasn't from this structure, power structure that we had. It was Workers' Party and this other PSDB, with this neoliberal party. They always clash in elections, and this one they didn't do very well, and Bolsonaro is like the new opposition.
Right.
And it's a very small, very small party. It was not.
Is there anyone in it besides him? Besides Bolsonaro?
Yeah, he brought like a lot of other conservatives to this party, but it's fairly new, you know, and it doesn't have any history over here.
Right. Okay, but Bolsonaro himself was in Congress for a long time, for like the last 30 years.
Yeah, 27 years.
So before he formed the new Social Liberal Party, what party was he in?
He was in the party that's called Progressive Party, but it's really not progressive. It's just the name. The Operation Car Wash, it was one of the most named parties, was this party that he was in for the most part of his career.
It's interesting how all around the world, every party wants to be, you know, called something like Liberal Party or Progressive Party.
Yeah.
Or Democratic Party, or even a Republican Party, because, you know, the Republic was stood in opposition to the monarchy and all. So, like, there's no one who's like, you know, I guess they're conservative parties, but most of them dress themselves up as some sort of version of.
Yeah, there's like no new liberal party, no. No
right.
Businessman party, you know.
Right. No one's like saying, yeah, we're the corporate party. And that's
yeah, we don't see that really often.
Despite hosting the Olympics here in Rio, Brazil has had an unprecedented year of political and economic crises. The country is in recession, its president was impeached, her replacement could be impeached too, and the former Speaker of the House is behind bars. With public protests against corruption on the rise, in this Upfront special, I'll speak to the former president, Dilma Rousseff, who says her impeachment was a coup against democracy.
It was August of 2016. It was in the middle of the scandal of the car wash. It really was something that pushed this agenda forward. And
that came after the recession. She was,
yeah,
like, it was because of the car wash scandal and the recession that got her impeached.
Yeah, yeah. Because since Lula got in 2003, the Brazilian GDP really grew big since Lula got in. And Brazil really was rising up. And in 2014, it was the first time our GDP got down, started to lower. And this is when a lot of sectors of the opposition start to move forward this agenda to impeach her. And they didn't really had a really solid corruption case to lean on. But they did all sorts of law acrobacies. I don't know if that makes sense, but did all sorts of stuff to make to find something that made her impeached. And even what they got, I don't know how to translate that or really know exactly, but it wasn't enough for the impeach, you know. Lots, the workers' party say it wasn't fair, and I'm not here to defend the workers' party, because I know they're not really saints or something, but it was very, very, there was an agenda.
It was like almost a technicality.
Yeah, technicality. Yeah,
she may have been doing something that was technically against the rules, but it was not egregious or terrible. But because of
all those economic did problems before her, it was a common thing, you know.
Yeah, and so that's the other thing I wanted to talk about was that the Brazilian democracy. If you're listening to like NPR or some of the kind of progressive left radio in the United States, you'll hear those people say, well, Brazil's democracy is still young, you know, and that means it's sort of vulnerable. I'm trying to get my head around that is actually tricky in terms of experience, because, you know, I've grown up in the United States where we think of our democratic institutions as being immutable and transhistorical and forever, even though they're not, you were born right after the end of a military dictatorship, like what, 6 years after the end of the military dictatorship in Brazil. So I guess what I want to ask you is, what are your impressions of that time before you were born? And how do you think living in a country that had been in a military dictatorship has influenced your thinking, if at all, as you kind of grew up in a more democratic Brazil?
Yeah, it's funny you said that about United States, that you felt it was always immutable, because when I grew up, it felt like Brazil always been like that. It was not the democracy that we had. It was didn't felt like something that my generation earned, you know. It was just something that always were there, and but we did grew up with this knowing about the military dictatorship, and they taught that on school, at least on the private school, and I guess the public school is does have that on the stuff they got up.
The syllabus has something about that as well for public school kids.
Yeah. It's really recognized on Brazil, but I guess it wasn't recognized enough, you know. And the media always talked about the military dictatorship, but more of the parts of the censorship and the military being bad and hitting people, but they don't talk about the communist fight that got in those times, like Marighella and stuff. This stuff, it was more we learned on school. And like we grew up, the military dictatorship always was a part of the Brazilian imaginary. It was always something that we look at the past and said, oh, this is what very bad. But at the same time, it was fairly common to hear older people, especially like two generations before, like my grandparents, say that things were better during the dictatorship. It wasn't bad. You know?
This will be the Brazilian boomers, right?
Yeah.
People in their 70s now. Maybe.
Yeah. Some of those people, especially the middle class, they didn't felt like bad, because actually in the military dictatorship, we had a lot of loans from United States. So like we sort of have a quote unquote economic miracle, but that didn't proceed very well after the dictatorship fell through. And now we are in a lot of debt. We feel this economically in Brazil. We feel these loans till today, you know. And the military dictatorship didn't fell through like it was. People fought. No, people fought. I didn't mean that. I mean like it wasn't. It was really a deal, a big deal that the military saw that the government was. People wasn't liking the dictatorship, was seen through all the censorship and stuff. So they kind of make a deal to transition to democracy, but they never really got expelled from the system, you know. They kind of hang around.
Right. So those same business interests are still powerful in Brazil, and some of the same leaders are still either in the military or in government.
Yeah, I guess the more direct leaders they went away, but some of the parties, and I say parties with quotes, they kind of transforming in new parties, but with the same people, you know. So those interests, they still on the table.
Do you have friends that are your age that are supporting Bolsonaro?
Yeah, actually, yeah, I got friends from school. My current friends, people that I see today, don't really are Bolsonaro. Because it really doesn't make sense, but people that I know from school are supporting him now, and it's really weird to see people that sat through the same history classes that I did supporting this guy. You know, it's kind of sad actually.
They say that his base is largely made up of young people, like millennials.
I didn't really realize it was like mostly millennials, but it probably is because we do have our millennial Trump supporters over here to translate it as Bolsonaro supporters. But Bolsonaro, I guess he really panders for a really huge audience, you know.
What about the racial side to this? Is he appealing to white people in Brazil for the most part?
No, that kind of identitary politics doesn't really fly over here with the white with the identitarian, because I mean Bolsonaro is very white, but Brazil is really famous for race mixing, and in that's some say that is a good thing, but other people, including black people, say that it's makes things sort of worse, you know, because then the racism is kind of concealed. There's a lot of hypocrisy about racism in America. People seem to be more overtly racist, so you know, oh, this guy is racist, this guy is racist. And in Brazil, it's more the racism really mixed with the class stuff, you know. I mean, there's white people and black people here, and there's all the implications of racism. Because of that mixing, people say, oh, I don't care. I really don't care for... I really don't see the color of skin. My grandpa was a black guy, so I don't really see that. But when we see the numbers, you see that the black population is really in more predicament, you know, and instead of Portuguese people, because Portuguese, Italian, and the more white immigrants, you know.
You have intermarriage and a lot of racial mixing, and yet the division still remains.
Yeah, even in, because there's a lot of even white poor people here in Brazil. But if you if you see the favelas, even the black poor people are even poorer, you know.
And so that's the other thing I understand about Brazil is that it's like an odd combination of, let's say, Belgium and this is something I got from something I saw. They said it's like half Belgium, half India. Like you have terrible slums, but then you also have these areas that seem to be prospering and you have good access to healthcare and a good safety net for the middle class. But then you have these just terrible slums outside of major cities.
Yeah, we, especially in Rio de Janeiro, the slums are really divided from, there's like a big building, a super rich building, and right behind it, there's the hills where the favela stays, and the class disparity is very overt. In those cases. Here in São Paulo, it's kind of different because we don't have like this beach setting going on, so we don't have the hills and stuff. But it's kind of integrated in the city, you know. And we have Cracoland. I don't know if you heard about it, but it's like a slum. I guess you could say it's Islam, but it's a lot of street population addicted to crack, hang around. It's in the center of the city, you know. It's in downtown. There's like the historic downtown, and then you cross the street, turn into the right, and there's like a lot of people in a really bad predicament, you know.
That's the other thing I heard is that the crime rate has gone up in the last decade in Brazil, that there's a lot of crime, and that Bolsonaro is sort of playing to people's fears and people's longing for law and order in his campaign.
Yeah. He does that mostly by saying one of the things that he said most is that the problem with the police, the problem of our safety is that the police doesn't kill enough. And like we have the police that mostly kills and get killed in the world, even in countries that are in civil war and stuff, you know. And he thinks that if the police kills more thugs, then we will get more safe. And he's very pro guns to the people, and he thinks that will solve this problem. It's that kind of stuff he says.
But do you think Lula, if he was still running, if he was allowed to run, would beat Bolsonaro?
Yeah, the polls that they made in the beginning of the year before Lula was arrested said that if Lula ran, he probably would win the first stage of the election. Because I don't know if you guys have two stages in the election, but here we get like a first stage that all candidates run together, and then we got a second stage that the two most voted run against each other. And this is what we're having now against Haddad and Bolsonaro. And when some candidate gets more than 50% in the first stage, there is no second stage. You just go through direct. And if Lula ran, the poll said that he would win the first stage, you know. That's the thing that happened in 2019, that they really rushed through his trial for the apartment on the Lava Jato, the car wash, and it was a very mediatic trial. It was very, the evidence that they had wasn't satisfactory, but they even they got him arrested anyway. And it was, it's kind of clear that that was interest in, at play, you know.
So you wish that Lula was not in jail and was running, I'm guessing. Is that, would you say that's true?
Yeah, he would be running. Haddad was like, he came very late in the president racial, in the presidential race. He was very late, and because the Workers' Party was trying all sorts of ways to get Lula to run, even though he was arrested. And but they went with Haddad anyway. And the beginning of his campaign, he was a lot like, "Oh, I am Lula's candidate. Vote for me, because if you vote for me, you're voting for Lula." It was not a very pretty sight, but they had to do it.
It looks like Bolsonaro is going to win.
Yeah.
So if that happens, what are you most afraid of yourself? And what do you expect to see? I mean, do you worry about a return to something like the days of the military dictatorship in Brazil?
I don't know. Like, but we're seeing here, we really can't tell what's going to be. Because although he's very fond of the military dictatorship and his vice president is a general, and he makes all kinds of gestures toward that, I don't think, like, if he wins January 1st, we'll have a military dictatorship, because he's winning the elections after all. So there's really no need to make a violent takeover. But we don't know, because
but the cops might become more brutal.
Yeah, we're seeing that right now. In last weeks, we got a lot of cops coming in universities and like getting into teachers' classes that were saying like classes again. They had like classes against fascism. Or some university put an anti-fascist flag in front of university, and that got the police to go there and was saying that it was an electoral crime, even though they weren't making any gesture toward Haddad or something. It was just talking about fascism because it's really pertinent right now. And so are we seeing
so they,
that?
Do they arrest these people, or do they just break up the meeting, or what was the result of that?
I guess they break the meeting, and I believe someone was arrested, but it was more of threatening, you know. And in our police, the police that fight crimes the most is actually called military police, because it's the same police that we had in the dictatorship. And when we transitioned to a democracy, that the police didn't really change it, the people, you know, it was basically the same, but now they act in this this democracy, and there's like a lot of intentions to come back and to those days where the police was more powerful. And I don't know, you asked me what I think it's going to happen, and definitely the police is going to get more violent. The police is already very violent in the favelas, and they use torture to this day, but it happens with the black population, happens with poor people. But we might see a bigger, more expanded violence towards more people and more violence in the favelas towards the black and the poor.
What about you as an artist? I mean, I know you're working on a kid's show, so you might be able to just skate on by with not a problem, but you also do your own political cartoons. Do you worry about that something you might draw could bring the attention of the police?
Yeah, I don't know if that's the kind of censorship that we don't know that we're going to have, just like we had in those days. Because those days we didn't have the internet. We didn't have like cameras all around, you know. So I don't think that kind of stuff going to fly, but it could. So,
well, I think conversations like this one and, like, you know, having international contacts.
Yeah.
Will probably be useful, you know, in the months to come,
yeah,
and years to come. Hope.
But actually, the Bolsonaro administration, the Bolsonaro says that when he gets elected, his administration is going to cut a lot of stuff because he has this very liberal agenda, and like a very chaotic liberal agenda, not the cool, cute type of liberal. And he, one of the things he says he's gonna cut, he's gonna erase the culture office of Brazil, and a lot of those cuts could mean of less money to the animation market that is very that just started to flourish, mostly because a lot of projects that the Lula government and the Dilma government made. They had a lot of art programs and I don't know what to say, but yeah, they did a lot of this stuff, and that could mean I kind of fear losing my job, like if there's a lot of cuts on this part, you know.
Right. So rather than being censored for something you've drew, you'll just be defunded.
Yeah, that's more like it. That's more like a more material fear right now, you know.
Well, shit, man. I hope that doesn't happen. We can put this onto the podcast that we already recorded, just sort of as a follow-up. Now that Bolsonaro has won, see how you're doing. So how are you doing?
Yeah, man, I don't know. Kind of mixed feelings about this, you know? Well, I don't feel good or anything because it's like really shitty. But at the same time, I kind of see an opportunity to fight back, you know, like, because Bolsonaro, he won in, just like Trump, he won exploiting this unsatisfaction of the people with the establishment, and people are right to be wrong, to be mad about it, but so, but they went with the first guy with some hate speech or whatever. But I think that the same thing that made them choose those type of leaders could make them, we could show a more, a way to emancipation. I don't know if I made my. But yeah, I don't know. I think that things are heating up, you know, and that goes for both ways. Things could get worse, but if we fight back and we are focused about it, we can make a very meaningful change for workers and for little dignity in life, you know.
Is Haddad going to be thrown in jail or executed, or is he going to be allowed to go back to his everyday life as a teacher?
No. He's going to back to his career teaching, but that's not the mood right now. He rules democratically. We don't know what's going to happen next, but I don't think the first thing he's going to do is start to chasing off his opposition. Although there's a lot of things. like laws passing on Congress right now that really could be used against opposition and social movements.
That talk about killing his political opponents was mostly hyperbolic, but he will be clamping down on political speech and opposing democratic movements in the country.
Yeah, right now today they were voting in Congress a law, an addition to our anti-terrorism law, that could include political organization and ideology that could coerce the state to do something or whatever. And they want to put that inside the anti-terrorism. So that could be, that can be very dangerous for the future when we try to articulate a movement or something. They could say, oh, they're terrorists. They're trying to break peace and order, you know? So
they're almost equating socialism with terrorism.
Yeah. The narrative on Bolsonaro's campaign was very heavy-handed on this side. It was, they said, like, they paint the Workers' Party like it was a communist threat, like we live in a communist dictatorship or something. They said that's what the Workers' Party was trying to do to Brazil, to create a socialist dictatorship. And just like Venezuela, they used the example of Venezuela a lot in his campaign, like our flag will never be red or something. So yeah, that could mean persecution.
How are people feeling on the streets, or how are people feeling in your community? After Trump was elected here, I knew a lot of people who were like having like anxiety attacks, and they really like were truly upset. But we also didn't anticipate it. Like, we didn't see it coming. Yeah. We thought he was going to lose.
Yeah, at the same time that we saw it coming, there was a slight hope for Haddad, but we knew that he would probably lose. But at the same time, there's a lot of people that are really sad and having anxiety and all the kind of shitty stuff. And at least on my community, my bubble. I don't know. On Brazil as a whole, I think that feels like things just went back to normal, kind of. But Bolsonaro is already making some moves towards, like, what kind of, I don't know what the lingo for that in United States, but who he's going to name for offices.
Yeah. Some appointments.
Yeah. And he already putting some people that are allegedly, they are definitely corrupt, that are investigated and stuff. And so you can see online, or you can see people that are already feeling kind of regretting voting for him, or are starting to question that.
Yeah, he was the anti-corruption candidate, right? And immediately turns around and puts in these people who were brought up on corruption charges already.
Yeah, like the first news he that came up, it was some guy that is being investigated for something.
Well, how are things for Oswaldo?
For Oswaldo, yeah, things are going all right, man. We're still doing the second season on the studio, and it's performing well on Cartoon Network here in Brazil. So I think the future, at least for Osvaldo, it's for now is bright.